Give and Take, written by Spacewall and read by Flower Parish. This is a Star Wars fic rated for general audiences, featuring the relationship Fox/Bail/Brea Organa, and the background relationships Cody/Obi-Wan Kenobi, Padme/Anakin Skywalker, and Bly/Ayla Secura. Summary. Bail and Brea Organa have known that they were soulmates for a very long time. When they start losing things to a person who isn't either of them, well, isn't that interesting? Fox is trying to track down his soulmate, but everything about them is very confusing.
Time, curious time, give me no compasses, give me no signs. Were there clues I didn't see? Isn't it just so pretty to think all along there was some invisible string tying you to me?
Ooh. Chapter 1. Fox's soulmate was a messy person. Well, not that messy in the grand scheme of things, he supposed, compared to someone like Bly's soulmate. But they lost things easily. He found things on Kamino all the time, but there, he was never sure what was his and what belonged to other people. The only things he always knew were his, even from a young age, were the political documents. There were other things, men's and women's clothing, both human, jewelry, styluses and pens, that he couldn't say with any confidence were his or not. But everyone who knew Fox knew that political treatises and documents were probably his, in the same way that trashy romance novels always belonged to Rex. "Treatise on Midrim Mining Regulation," Cody read, and slapped it down on Fox's bunk. "Fell out of your locker, Vod." Fox was starting to wonder if the Kaminoans would give him a filing cabinet if he asked politely enough. "Brea, have you seen my mining treatise?" "Not yet. Have you seen my slippers?" Bail stuck his head through the half-open fresher door to look at his wife. "I haven't, and that brooch of your mother's never turned up either." It was something he'd been keeping a particular eye out for over the course of several months. Brea turned her head to meet his, considering, before looking back in her mirror. Well, either were the victims of an extremely protracted and very weird theft, unlikely, or one of us is lying, Brea said it with joking amusement, not with any real suspicion, also unlikely, or we need to consult an expert and figure out if it's possible that at least one of us has an additional soulmate. Brea was on the same page as he was. Thank the goddess. Bail wouldn't have known what to do if she hadn't been. "I'm sure I can find time to consult with the Republic Archives when I'm on Coruscant. If anywhere has mention of it, it'll be there." "Good," Brea told him, leaning into the mirror to apply her mascara. "I can talk to my grandmother. She might know something. Wish me luck in finding time to balance archival research and this year's Senate sessions. The Separatist crisis is worse than ever, I think. At least you have that new senator from Naboo coming to back you up soon. I liked most of the policies she mentioned in her speeches." "True, but somehow, even with new support incoming, I have a bad feeling about this session." On Coruscant, the profile of things Fox found changed dramatically. As the commander of the guard, he went from sharing bunk space with dozens of brothers to just one, Commander Stone, whose soulmate was the guard's other commander, Thorne. Later in the war, Fox would swap their bunking so Stone and Thorne would be together, while he shared with the unsoulmated Commander Thyre. Each of these arrangements, for different reasons, led to the same outcome. Fox finally had a space where he knew that everything he found belonged to him. Unfortunately, the sheer business of his new position meant that he was rarely in his own room enough for it to help as much as he would have liked. He still found things in the hallways and offices and senatorial pods that he had no idea who they belonged to. Very occasionally, things were marked, monogrammed, or otherwise clearly identified as belonging to particular senators or their staff. Somehow, by a cruel whim of the universe, this was never the case for things that appeared in his room. Fox kept a list of the tally for each senator or their office. It had a few other pieces of data on it, including any names he'd ever found on documents before coming to Coruscant, 50-odd senators, usually documents with multiple names on them, and whether or not he knew that the people in question already had soulmates, like Senator Amidala did. Currently, the top of the list was actually held by the office of the senator for Herdessa, but as far as Fox could tell, this was largely because one of her aides was willfully disorganized and, fortunately or unfortunately, didn't have a soulmate to receive their frequently lost property. This issue plagued the entire guard, not Fox in particular. Second place was also likely a dead end, the senator for Alderaan, Bail Organa's office. Organa already had a soulmate to whom he was married, although Fox supposed it could have been one of his aides. There were four aides, a policy consultant, and a secretary in the Organa office, and Fox had turned documents in to all of them, and never to the senator himself. But once, he was working unusually late, around 1 a.m, and found a file tucked under a bench in one of the Senate hallways. Appeal to the Judicial Committee on Reforms to GAR Internal Investigations read the title of the report. Under this, it bore the names of a couple dozen worlds and their senators. When Fox flipped past the title page, he found this copy was marked up and, importantly, had the Alderaanian crest embossed on the inside cover. Mentally adding one to the tally, Fox trudged back upstairs to leave it under Senator Organa's door. But, to his surprise, the light remained on in the senator's office. So, instead, he knocked. "Come in," an unfamiliar voice called, with some surprise in its tone. Fox opened the door to find Senator Organa sitting at his secretary's desk surrounded by data pads, flimsy plast file folders, and empty caff cups. "Senator?" "Commander," Organa acknowledged, with some shock. "What can I do for you at this hour?" Tragically, few senators both remembered to address Fox by his title and were actively trying to help him do his job. "Nothing. I just came to bring you this. I think someone from your office must have dropped it somewhere." He passed the folder to Organa. "Ah, thank you. I had wondered where this went. I'm very sorry for the number of times guardsmen have had to return lost documents to our office in the last few months." There was an awkward moment, after the exchange, where neither of them knew exactly what to say. Eventually, Fox asked, "What are you doing here at this hour, Senator?" Organa seemed to grow focused as his mind returned to thoughts of his work. "Ah, yes, don't worry, it isn't an all-too-common occurrence, but there's a vote tomorrow on whether or not to reinstate the mandates of the Jedi Corps. I think that, on balance, the service members do more good at their original roles in the Corps than they do trying to assist the GAR, particularly the Agri Corps. Letting their work fall to the wayside is only buying ourselves trouble later. They're far more successful than any sort of army in preventing conflicts, purely by reducing desperation. General Kenobi had the Jedi Archives pull documentation on Agri Corps success rates in the last 20 years and..." He stopped abruptly. "I'm sorry, I must be boring you. Thank you for bringing this back. I hope you're able to head home soon and get some rest." It wasn't boring, exactly, but Fox had more than enough things to worry about as it was, without trying to consider what Jedi who weren't generals were supposed to be doing. "I think you'll have a hard sell trying to convince people that the army keeping them safe isn't the most important thing right now, sir." Organa looked down at his documents and back up at Fox. "Yes, you're right. But the Agri Corps is keeping them safe. They just don't see famine as a threat because almost none of them have ever experienced it." "Then I guess you just have to make them see it as a real threat," Fox told him, and was surprised to see a slight smile grace Organa's lips. Perhaps it was what forced him to press on. In his time at the Senate, he'd learned far too much about how it operated and how politicians thought. It needs to seem real to them, that it's their worlds that might starve, their people who might be hurt. "You're exactly right, Commander. I intend to do just that." Fox had turned and was very nearly out the door when Organa called after him. "Would you do me the favor of telling me your personal name?" "It's Fox." Organa's smile grew fuller. Good night, Commander Fox. Good night, Senator Organa. Brea had a lot of long mornings and long nights as Queen of Alderaan. There was a lot to be done, and, with Bale off in the Senate, only her to do it. They had both always supported the other in their political endeavors, but having the senator and the queen married to one another always caused there to be an overwhelming amount of work in their household. It was especially bad with the war on. Although Alderaan itself remained mostly untouched by fighting, Bale had been unable to make it home for any significant stretch since the beginning of the war. Brea missed him. Fortunately, they were soulmates. Whatever strange thing, whichever unknown person, was having an impact on their bond at the moment, there was still that initial connection between Bale and Brea that brought them together. There were the little things, when she found his jacket thrown over her chair, or received a package back from Coruscant containing one of her scarves. One morning, Brea found herself sitting at her desk, with that morning's stack of briefings in front of her, and, to her surprise, found a warm cup of caff in a neutral white mug already sitting on her desk. "Flora, did you make caff already?" Her assistant rolled her chair in front of the door to make eye contact with Brea. "No, Your Majesty, and that wasn't there when I arrived this morning either." In that case, it had appeared when Brea was already in the room. She let herself laugh a little. "We are aligned with Coruscant Standard Time at the moment, so it's morning there as well. And an unlucky one for Bale, it would seem." She took a sip of the caff. No, not for Bale. He always took his caff black. This had sugar in. She didn't correct herself to Flora, but she did make a note of the fact in the list she and Bale were sharing. What we know about Soulmate X. Loses very few things. We didn't start losing things to them until at the latest CRC 7946. Age 11, unless not human. Species, at least 1 foot. Lost sock. Species wears socks. Knows how to fold flimsy birds. Possibly learned from Bale doing same. Is probably on Coruscant. Brea's lost earring turned into Coruscant guard. Drinks caff with sugar. It was a pitifully short list, but every journey had to start somewhere. For now, Brea cradled her neutral white mug in her hands and issued a quiet thank you to the universe for whatever might come of this. "Where is that criffing calf? I am having a long enough morning as it is." Thayer, in the interest of keeping the peace, passed his cup over instead of answering. Bale attended the wedding of Ayla and Bly Sakura mostly by accident. He didn't actually know either the bride or the groom, but Obi-Wan did, and he'd invited Bale to come for largely political reasons. It was good to have a clear senatorial presence in support of clones exercising their sentient rights. Senator Amidala was there, of course, but alone she could easily be discounted. Bale and Senator Mina Tills of Mon Cala together helped make it clear that this was an active recognition of the rights of clones to marry. Bale ended up spending most of the event with Senator Tills because, for the first time in the many years that they had known each other, Obi-Wan ditched him with no warning. Instead of spending the day with Bale, he spent it being joined at the hip with Commander Cody, his soulmate, Bale said, with some incredulity, when Padme told him. "I didn't think Obi-Wan had a soulmate." "He didn't," Skywalker told him, leaning up against the pillar directly behind him in a way that made him look like a poster of a character from a bad teen holodrama. "He only realized after the start of the war. They're both crazy organized. They only figured it out because Obi-Wan is physically incapable of holding onto a lightsaber on a battlefield for more than about 30 seconds. "Bold words, Knight Skywalker," Padme flirted with a smirk. Bale had seen her carrying Anakin's lightsaber before, She had a clip for it on all of her dresses. Skywalker laughed. Oh, he's terrible. You have no idea. He just happens to hide it better. Senator Tills, looking very, very bored, stared off into the middle distance. Bail joined her in watching the happy couple as the Securas excused themselves from the party in their honor and fled into the night. Unlike her, though, he was consumed not by boredom, but by expectation. That night, he left a message for Brea to listen to when she woke up.
Hello, my dove. I hope you're sleeping, given the time in Aldera. Let me know when you get this. I have a sneaking suspicion that I know how so many of my things have been getting handed in to the Coruscant Guard, and why our soulmate seems so much older than our timeline suggests. I think they're probably a clone. We'll have to think more about how to go from here in the morning. I love you very much, Brea. Good night to me and good morning to you.
Shortly after Bly's wedding, when most of the guests had dispersed back to the war, Fox finally managed to corner Cody and press Gangham into dinner together. His brother had been undeniably slippery in the days after the rather public revelation of his soulmate, and the only person who'd actually managed to get him to sit down and talk about it was, reportedly, Bly himself, probably because he hadn't actually witnessed the realization. Not even Rex had managed to call her the Marshal Commander before the 501st shipped out, so Fox took it as a personal achievement that he had managed the feat that had eluded Rex. Of course, it helped that, for clones on Coruscant, Fox's word was law. When he ordered a VOD to report to his office, no matter how high their rank among their own men, they couldn't say no. And so, he captured Cody and dragged him down to the mess hall, where they grabbed trays and went back to eat in Fox's room. Thayer, as luck would have it, was on shift for another 4 hours. "You can't keep me here against my will," Cody said, when Fox motioned him to sit in the too small metal chair at the end of his bed. Fox sat on the bed itself. Bold words from a man who'd walked all the way here under his own power. "Oh, I have 100 Vade out there right this minute. Is your soulmate going to come rescue you?" Cody gave him a very put-upon look. "Fox. Cote." The put-upon look grew, if anything, more pronounced. "It's private, Fox, and very new. There's nothing to tell you that you didn't see for yourself." Based on the way they'd come into Bly's wedding together, that wasn't true at all, but Fox didn't want to know anything about that. "I'm not here to ask you how he was in bed, Vod. I'm here because I want to know if you're happy. You deserve someone looking out for you for a change." Cody had a habit of trying to look out for everyone else. It was rarely ever allowed to be mutual. So Fox, who was marginally older, tried to impose some of that whenever he could. Cody, perhaps realizing that he couldn't win this fight, looked down at his terrible mess hall dinner. "I'm glad it's him. I wouldn't have wanted it to be anyone else." "I guess that's what makes you soulmates, isn't it? You weren't supposed to want your soulmate to be anyone else. Manda or Kara or Force willed you together for a reason, after all." Cody shrugged. "Obi-Wan says he knows people who've been hurt by their soulmates, who've hurt them. He says, and I agree, that where it counts, the choice is still ours, of what we are to each other and what we want to be, just like any other relationship." Fox didn't know who his soulmate was, but last week they'd lost a piece of flimsy folded into the shape of a rose. He'd known for years that his soulmate practiced some sort of flimsy craft. Since they lost them all the time, Fox thought it was probably a form of stress relief. This one, though, had been written on. It read, "They probably won't believe us unless we have real proof. How? Ask B." Every piece of Fox wanted to know what those words meant. He wanted to know his soulmate. And yet, it was a choice, too. His wanting that, in spite of the fact that he'd been made for war, was a choice. His wanting to know them was a choice. And if when he met them, he didn't want, or they didn't want, then that was a choice too. Any other sparkling pearls of wisdom from the great Master General Kenobi, negotiator of the Jedi Order? Cody flushed with embarrassment. He maybe has a tendency to over-philosophize some things, but I don't blame him. It's been a lot to take in, for both of us. We both thought we were alone for so very long, and yes, maybe it was our fault, but it was hard not knowing. Of course he's spent a long time thinking about what it all means. Fox had, too, if in far fewer and less impressive words than Kenobi probably had. And you, no matter how we told you that you probably just hadn't figured out what gifts were yours yet, you never believed us. What have you learned from all your obsessive wondering? Cody prodded at the lumps of unknown grain with his spoon. It wiggled like jelly. I've learned that sometimes you really should just shut up and listen to what the universe is trying to get through your thick skull. Last week, Fox had found a pair of gloves that fit him just perfectly. The week before, he'd found a ring that didn't even fit on his pinky finger. The sizes of his soulmate's clothing were never consistent. And what if the things the universe is telling me are confusing? Then maybe you should look at it from a different angle. Kara, help me if you're already starting to sound like him after less than a 10-day as soulmates. What'll it be like after a few years? Yes, how are you, my dear brother Fox? How are all my most excellent friends in the Senate? Cody flicked the lug with his spoon right into Fox's face and said, "No one will ever believe you." Can I ask you a question about Cody? Obi-Wan, half asleep on the sofa in Bail's office after a round of particularly brutal negotiations, blinked awake to glare at him. It was just like old times, before the war broke out. "You can tell Quinlan that I'm never settling his betting ring, and that the only person I'm telling if I ever get engaged is Satine." Bail, who was perfectly aware that the Duchess of Mandalore had her name down for a proposal 3 days after the war ends, wisely chose not to correct Obi-Wan's assumption of her neutrality. She had a sabacc face sharpened against Obi-Wan in her youth, and Bail knew better than to cross her. "It's not about the bet," Bail assured him, though he made no attempt at denying that there was one. "Truth be told, it isn't really about you either. I just need your advice." Pulling himself up to a seated position and attempting to brush his hair into something closely resembling order with only his fingers, Obi-Wan said, "Very well then, ask away." And so, for the first time, Bail sat there and spoke to someone other than Brea about what was really going on. She'd spoken to her grandmother back when it first began, but otherwise, no one else knew. It had just been too awkward and embarrassing to announce that, "No, actually, we crifted up and we're on the market for a new soulmate." Besides, with the war on, it seemed like the last time for personal considerations. But Obi-Wan, on that count, couldn't judge them. He sat and listened to Bail's story with an expression of curiosity and sympathy. "So you think they're on the guard?" "It is the most logical conclusion." Just then, a knock came at Bail's door, and, with his permission, a guard entered holding a datapad. "I've been asked to return this to you, Senator Organa." "Thank you, Rhys. Have a good evening." "You too, Senator, General Kenobi." They both waved him out, and Obi-Wan offered Bail an extremely gossipy raised eyebrow. "And is he?" "No, that's the problem." Bail pulled the list from his desk and passed it to Obi-Wan. "This is the list of all the guards who've brought things back to my office. It happens at least once every other day. But sometimes the things they bring are Brea's, sometimes they really do belong to my aides. I have a theory that Lady Wanna is actually soulmates with someone on the guard, because she seems to have things found by them almost as much as I do. It's a mess." "But," Obi-Wan said, with a conspiratorial look on his face, "we know three things. The first is that your soulmate is highly ranked enough to delegate. The second, which I know and you are about to, is that the Vare maintain lists of things found in common spaces, and by whom for exactly this reason. Next time something of yours is found, you and Lady Wanna should both ask to see the list. At least among the 212th and on Kamino, that rule is inviolable, and I would be shocked if the guard didn't practice something of the same." That was very good to know, if only Bail could work up the courage to act on it. "And what's the third thing?" "The third thing is that, if they haven't figured it out by now, your soulmate may be, as their siblings would say, a bit of a decoot." Bold words coming from you, Kenobi. End of chapter one.
And isn't it just so pretty to think all along there were some invisible string tying you to me?
Chapter 2. Key, one of the guard's pilots, was soulmates with the aide to the senator for Alderaan. 3 days after figuring out that they were soulmates, they had a courthouse wedding with droids for witnesses and vanished to parts unknown. This was, legally speaking, desertion, and necessitated a full investigation to attempt to apprehend the two lovebirds. To say that nobody's heart was really invested in the search was an understatement. Key was the only one of her batchmates left, and finding her soulmate was just about the only good thing to happen to her in 2 years. If running away was what it took to keep her alive, then nobody really begrudged her that. Still, the Chancellor had requested an investigation, and an investigation he would have. Fox didn't handle the matter in person, mostly, but it would hardly have been appropriate to have one of his subordinates interview a senator on a criminal matter. And so, when the time came, Fox sat down with Senator Organa himself. Or, rather, Fox sat down. The senator hovered around his office for a few minutes before offering Fox a cup of caff. It seemed that, perhaps as an apology for all the hassle, Senator Organa was on a personal campaign to caffeinate the entire Coruscant Guard. He and his aides had been offering caff to everyone who came to return things to their offices or question any of them. Fox still found entirely too many of their things, even with Key and Lady Praetoras out of the picture, and they'd finally surpassed the disorganized Herdesan senator for the honor of the top of his lost items list. "Sugar, no cream," he said, in response to Senator Organa's question. The senator quickly turned back to finish preparing the caff and brought both cups over to his desk. "I imagine this can be resolved fairly quickly," Organa said, seeming almost too relaxed. "I don't have anything to tell you about where Wanna and Key might have gotten to." "Don't have anything to tell, not I don't know." Of course, the senator for Alderaan would never aid and abet criminals. Organa's too relaxed expression morphed into a quite genuine grin. "Naturally, and I'm sure the commander of the Coruscant Guard is putting in his most thorough effort to apprehend these dangerous criminals." On principle, Fox didn't think too highly of defectors. If one of his own had gone to the Separatists, he might have killed them. But this was something altogether different, and everyone on the guard knew it. This was desperation and a glimpse of hope, not cowardice, and certainly not treachery. "And I hope that you don't doubt my resolve to eliminate the threat," Fox said, as he very deliberately put away his datapad of notes and took a sip of the caff. That cheeky grin on Senator Organa's face was just about the best thing he'd seen all year. "Of course, if you knew that Wanna's mother happened to be the youngest child of a Mandalorian countess with familial holdings on Mandalore, you would immediately act to negotiate with the Duchess for the repatriation of your missing pilot." No wonder Key had been so confident in her ability to run away. "It's a shame I don't know about that. Of course, even if I did, the Duchess of Mandalore is very much opposed to the Republic's war, and would no doubt kick up quite a fuss. It would be more trouble to everyone involved than a single soul is really worth." "I'm sure that single soul was worth quite a great deal to Wanna. She's never been a person to do anything in half measures, in all the time I've known her." His tone was reassuring, and Fox abruptly realized that Organa was, in his own subtle way, trying to assure Fox that Key would be all right. "Isn't that what soulmates are for? To be someone who saves your soul?" Fox's question was largely hypothetical, but he'd been idly musing the matter over lately. He'd been on Coruscant for what felt like a lifetime, and had made very little progress in identifying his soulmate. The Alderaanians were at the top of the list, and everyone left in their office had a soulmate who was listed, dead or alive, on their personnel files. The Herdesans had two possibilities, but neither of them matched the unique fashion sense of Fox's soulmate. He'd knocked dozens of people off the list, and didn't feel any closer to an answer than before. Organa, who had a soulmate himself, said, "I prefer to think of it as a partnership. Every relationship has a give and a take in it, an exchange. With your soulmate, it's easier to give, and the things they give you have more value. The act itself is a metaphor, in a sense. Do you have a soulmate yourself, Commander?" "I believe I'm supposed to be the one doing the questioning here," retorted Fox, but he answered anyways, "And no, I don't know who my soulmate is, but I do have one." "Are you looking for them, then?" Fox had been looking nearly his whole life for clues. He hadn't realized that not looking was even an option until he figured out that Cody did have a soulmate and was just being stupid about it. "I am." "In that case, Commander, I wish you very happy hunting." Fox let himself smile, just a little. Organa looked quite delighted by it. "I'll try my best. By the way, if any well wishes happened to be able to reach the Lady's Praetoris, I, as the commander of the guard, would certainly not wish them both my most sincere congratulations on successfully finding each other." "Oh, of course not. I certainly wouldn't pass the message on, suspecting that Lady Key would be relieved to know that she had the support of her brothers in spite of her unannounced flight from Coruscant." "Never." They shared knowing smiles. It was a shame, Fox thought, that Organa himself had a soulmate already. Even in their few interactions, he was by far one of the best senators Fox had ever met. Brea set foot on Coruscant for the first time in years with a sense of relief. She hated the noise and polluted air of the capital, but not nearly as much as she hated the anticipation. The moment was here, now, whether she wanted it or not. An armored clone awaited her when she got off her ship. Unnecessary with her personal guard, but Bale had requested this greeting specifically, through the proper channels, to give Brea a chance to meet their possible soulmate on her own terms. "Welcome to Coruscant, Queen Organa. It's been requested that you be provided with an escort to the Senate building." He had the same voice as his siblings, of course, but somehow it made her more nervous. Had Bale's request worked? Was this him? "Brilliant. Thank you, Commander Fox, Your Majesty." And it was. Brea forced herself to breathe normally. "Brea will do, or Queen Organa, if you prefer formality. My husband speaks highly of you." And he had, even before he was certain that Fox was their soulmate. She remembered Bale telling her about the guard commander who'd advised him on his AgriCorps proposal in the middle of the night. He'd been surprised, then, by how quickly someone with ostensibly no political training had reached in seconds the exact solution that Bale himself had spent all night puzzling out how to execute. It was so very Bale to have his crush start with someone's quick strategic mind. It was the foundation of his attraction to her and, she mused, of his longtime, purely theoretical crush on Obi-Wan Kenobi. They spoke a little on their walk together to Bale's office. Fox, once Brea convinced him that she really wasn't interested in standing on ceremony, remained a mostly reserved person. In that way, he was rather like Brea herself. Quiet, a lot of the time. Dignified, where it counted. But with an ability to be anything but in some contexts. Brea discovered this last facet of him when she brought up the topic of Padme and General Skywalker's not-so-secret marriage. "They're the biggest morons in the Senate if they think they're getting away with this," was Fox's official verdict. "We all know they're soulmates. Half the guard has seen them kissing in the hallways. My little brother Rex says that Skywalker's droid once went a little haywire and showed the entire 501st the wedding video." "Skywalker can hardly be blamed," Brea defended, for no particular reason other than that it was funny to say. After all, he learned subtlety from Obi-Wan, who is the worst kind of unsubtle, a man who thinks he's very subtle and clever. "Cody is probably the only person in the galaxy who finds General Kenobi a subtle flirt, so I suppose they're made for each other." Brea might well have continued with the gossip and the banter, if not for the fact that they'd reached the door to Bale's office. "Would you like to come in, Commander?" He looked at her oddly. "I'm sure you have more important things to do than gossip about the Jedi." Oh, certainly. She hadn't been able to plan a trip to Coruscant just for this. A queen had unavoidable demands on very nearly all of her time. But this was important for reasons far deeper than her desire to plumb the depths of the Garra's fraternal gossip network. I'm only as busy as you are. If you wanted to come inside with me, you would be welcome. I haven't even had a chance to ask your opinions on art yet. I'm not sure I have any. She hadn't really been expecting any. Arts education was usually the first thing to go in systems that trained children for one very specific purpose, like the Garra's cloning program no doubt had. But this was just the in she needed. That's the very best kind, you know. The rest of us spend years unlearning the opinions of others before we form any for ourselves. There is an exhibition of the Nibuian Lake Country School on at the Coruscant Arts Gallery at the moment. You could join me there, if you like. He flustered, a little. Her propositioning had not been subtle. I'm sure you'd rather take your soulmate. It was always a fight to keep her expression neutral. Oh, Bale is always invited, but a fresh perspective would be nice. He and I rarely agree about art, and so he doesn't voice his opinions as much as he used to. For a man who is an artist himself, if you can count nervous flimsy folding as an art, he has remarkably little artistic taste. It got exactly the reaction she was hoping for. Bale had lost so many of his little birds and other odds and ends to her over the years. There was a collection in her personal office that he didn't know about, that there was no way Fox hadn't received any himself. Brea swung the office door open. Bale, fortunately, had been possessed of the foresight to give the rest of the office the afternoon off. Would you like to come inside, Commander? I think the three of us have a great deal to discuss. He seemed frozen, rooted in place. I thought you were Senator Organa's soulmate. I am, Brea said simply. But you didn't really think that he was the one losing all that jewelry, did you? I didn't know that was possible. Everything is impossible until it happens. And it has happened. So you'd better come inside and we can figure it out from there. I can finally pay you back for that cup of calf you gave me all those months ago. Brea took his hand and dragged him inside, closing the door behind them. Cody is the Oblivious Brother, he said. Cody didn't recognize his soulmate when he got a clue to the face, he said. Cody doesn't know the meaning of subtle, he said. Bold, carking words from a man who had a ring with the seal of House Organa on it on his bedside table for a year and a half and didn't think to ask his colleague, Senator Organa, about it. Thayer is a traitor, and I'm going to kill him and however many more people it takes to stop a word of this from spreading. Too late, Vod. Bly knows already, and the rest of the Garra will hear about it in the next 10 days. He's more than entitled to revenge, after all these years. Bly won't do that. He knows that I want to keep this private, for now, and he never gossips when it's really important. As I pointed out, Bly doesn't need to mention any specifics about who your soulmate is to humiliate you for being an idiot. Criff you, Cody. I'm going to tell him that you were behind Pants all along, you Ossiam. He won't believe it. I'm the sedate and uptight one, or haven't you heard? How you and General Kenobi keep that reputation is one of the galaxy's greatest mysteries. Does he mass hypnotize people? Is that how it works? That's classified. Brea couldn't stay on Coruscant for long. She wished, for the first time in her entire life, that she could have. Usually, when she missed Bale, she wished that he could be home on Alderaan with her, but with Fox, for all that Brea was increasingly desperate to bundle him up and carry him home, Coruscant, not Alderaan, was the place where they'd met. Brea had romanced Bale in the green hills and snow-crusted mountains of her childhood. The time she shared with Fox was woven through the bustling streets of Coruscant, under the neon lights and the constant noise of speeders rushing and honking at each other. It wasn't a romantic setting. Brea didn't particularly mind, to no one's shock more than her own. Fox didn't have a lot of time off. Clones, he said, weren't really expected to need such human things as rest and relaxation, and unlike his siblings in the Garra proper, Fox never received anything so pleasant as shore leave. but he had a few hours here and there, and as commander of the guard, he could set his own schedule within certain limits. They found the time, in the evenings and mornings and in the middle of the night, for dinners, for quiet observance of Coruscant's orange dawn, for whispered secrets and promises. True to her word, Brea did take Fox to an art gallery, though not quite in the circumstances she'd originally planned. Fox couldn't get the time off in their regular hours. Fortunately, Bale said, with a mischievous grin plastered on his face, the senator for Naboo has certain influence. The curator was more than willing to arrange an after-hours showing for her particular friends. Fox, who was sitting at Bale's desk, hands folded politely in his lap, said, "I didn't know I was a particular friend to Senator Amidala." Brea asked, "Did you tell her about all of this?" She knew that they'd been seen together, out in the streets of Coruscant, and her maids and assistants had brought her rumors already that one of her or Bale was having an affair, but the three of them had all been fairly private about the truth. There wasn't a specific reason why, exactly, but it wasn't anyone else's business, and Fox seemed to be a mostly private person. Brea could respect that. Bale shook his head. "No, I just said that we wanted to take Fox. Didn't say why. Padme said, and I only slightly paraphrase here, the guard's workload really is appalling, the limiting of art as a province of the wealthy is a travesty, and of course, Bale, any time." Only Padme Amidala. Brea thanked her lucky stars every day that Padme had been elected senator. And so, they went to the gallery alone with the curator, the stillness like nowhere else on Coruscant, and Brea had the joy of watching Fox's eyes go wide. What was most remarkable about the Lake Country School was the scale of their paintings, the abstract representations of Naboo's natural beauty, exaggerated and heightened and rendered all-consuming on canvases twice Brea's height at the least. Some of the greatest paintings, it was said, had collapsed under their own weight and been lost to history. The best, of course, were actually on walls and other surfaces in Naboo itself, and had rarely been seen by off-worlders. But these lesser great works were extraordinary enough, and Fox stared, looking as hypnotized as Brea felt, at their unworldly beauty. She slipped her hand into his. "What do you think, my dear?" Brea and Bale were both still trying out pet names for Fox. Since they used them with each other, they wanted one for him. "It's beautiful." Bale, purely to be contrary, said, "I think it's cliched." Brea, who knew him far too well, waited until the curator's back was turned before sticking her tongue out at Bale. It took Fox time to settle into the fact that he had two soulmates. Two soulmates who were, respectively, the senator and queen of Alderaan. It was a strange and wondrous thing. They'd been worried, Brea had confided in him, that he wouldn't believe them. But that had never been the source of Fox's discomfort with the idea. In fact, the idea that it was two made sense of a great many things that he had never really understood about his soulmate, and the fact that one of those two was Bale made sense of a good many more. No, the source of Fox's uncertainty was something very profoundly human. He saw the familiarity of Bale and Brea's relationship, the way it was worn in like a good pair of boots, not tired but familiar, improved by their long years together, and felt something twist in his chest. It wasn't jealousy, or at least it wasn't jealousy of either of them. Rather, it was a certain envy for all the time he had lost. If he'd been someone else, chronologically the age he was biologically, then he could have had so much more time with them. As it was, he wondered if he could ever become so much a part of this thing as they were. Bale and Brea both tried, very blatantly, to assuage this fear. Once the three of them had agreed that they were interested in seeing if this was a romantic soulmate bond, they were careful to offer him touch just as freely as they did each other, to meet his eyes often, to invite him into their long-standing jokes and traditions. They bared their souls to him in a way that Fox didn't ever think another person had before. With his Vade, Fox had always known their secrets and had never needed to ask. But with Bale and Brea, there were things almost nobody knew. things that were his, now, just as much as theirs. "I can't have children," Brea burst out one evening, in the middle of a period of relative silence. It had been clear, nearly from Fox's arrival, that she'd been working up the nerve to say something. Fox had no way of contextualizing that feeling. He'd grown up in a place where no one had children or parents in any conventional sense, but from the look on Brea's face and the way Bale's hand had tightened on her knee, it was clear that it was something that meant a great deal to her. "I'm sorry," Fox said eventually. He hoped it was the right thing to say. And then, perhaps as an excuse, "This wasn't really a part of the way I grew up." He wanted to ask if it had some cultural significance, but couldn't work up the courage. Brea answered without him asking. "On Alderaan, it's not shameful, but for a woman in my position, it really is expected to produce some sort of heir eventually. And personally, I've always wanted children. We had been thinking about adopting, but..." She gestured around them at the ether, no doubt meaning the war. Fox hadn't ever considered the concept of raising children before. It hadn't been a factor. But one thing had been on his mind lately. "If the war ends, I don't want my Vodike, my little brothers, to be raised the way I was raised. I don't have any idea how to raise children. I don't really have any role models to go by, but..." Bale and Brea exchanged one of those looks that made them seem as telepathic as any Jedi. Bale said, "I think that idea deserves serious consideration." If he'd said yes instantly, Fox wouldn't have believed he was honest. "It might not be possible. The Kaminoans are touchy about certain things. I don't know what their contract says about leftovers, and even if it was, it might be cruel to break up batchmates, siblings, or, well, a closer form of sibling." Brea's expression had gone from sad to dangerous. "Well, I can't speak to the latter, but the Kaminoans are going to have another criffing thing coming if they lay hands on anybody." Fox was going to have to tell her about the decommissionings very gently. "I don't think that fight will end well for you." "Maybe not," Brea said, "but that doesn't mean it wouldn't be worth fighting." It wasn't that moment where Fox became sure of his place in their three-stranded bond, although it was one he would carry with him for a long time. The certainty came later, after Brea had been pulled back to Alderaan, in a moment that was quiet, not loud.
"Bale is still in his office, unhappy face,"
read the first message from Brea. The second, just below it, said,
"I entrust you with this critical mission. Spring RB from this prison."
Fox only realized he was smiling stupidly at his calm when Thayer groaned at him. "Living with you is going to be unbearable, isn't it?" Fox grabbed up his helmet. "You won't have to put up with it anymore tonight, Commander." "I think I actually hate you." It was 10 minutes later when Fox let himself into Bale's office and found him drooling on top of his data pad that he realized that he had a place here for the rest of his life. There was a warmth in him that had nothing to do with the way he slung Bale's arm over his shoulder to lift him and carry him out of the office. Afterwards, when the war was over, Bale cursed himself 100 times over for a fool. He had all the pieces to know that something was wrong, every miserable detail of it. He knew that Palpatine was a tyrant in the making. He knew, from Fox, that Palpatine was different to clones in private than he was in public. And, most devastating of all, he knew that Fox was missing time. Just a handful of afternoons, always after a meeting with Palpatine. But he'd always been so sure that it was just a mistake, that he'd fallen asleep somewhere. Bale had been arguing with him for months to go see a doctor, but Fox had been afraid of the consequences if it was serious, and Bale could hardly argue that point. But now, though, now he felt so very, very stupid. "Do you think he'll ever be able to forgive me?" He knew that Brea was thinking, "Don't blame yourself," and, "This isn't your fault." But what she said instead was,
"My ship leaves for Coruscant in an hour. Will you be able to be there for him until I can get there?"
Bale thought about the Republic collapsing around them. He probably could have been interim chancellor tomorrow, if he'd wanted it. It was tempting, in a way, to know he could use that power for good. As senior as he was in the delegation of 2000, he would have their full support. But then he looked down at the message on his comm from Commander Thyre.
Fox in for surgery at Jedi Temple now.
The Jedi had rushed him in as soon as the news of the Chancellor's plan had been uncovered. Bail had been briefed about it only an hour ago. He opened a new message thread, the one for urgent matters of the delegation of 2000.
I will not be throwing my hat in the ring for Chancellor.
Aloud, he said, I'll be there, for however long it takes. See you soon, my dove. Brea smiled, for the first time since the start of the call.
Love you, Bee.
Commander Fox, your partner is here to see you. That was uncharacteristically thoughtful of Thyre. Good man. The Jedi cadet, who was much more cheerful than the fierce general who had performed Fox's surgery, grinned brightly. Yes, sir, he seems that much. Should I let him in? Master Che says it's all right for you to have visitors as long as they're restful. Thyre wasn't a particularly restful person, but he was more restful than, say, Bly. Please. She nodded and motioned to Thyre through the door, and in stepped Bail. Oh, Fox said, dumbly, as the cadet stepped outside. My partner. Bail was a smart man, and he understood instantly where the confusion had occurred. Thyre told me you were here. I hope that's all right. He'll probably be going into surgery shortly, otherwise I'm sure he would be here. Master T mentioned to me in the waiting room that they're prioritizing all the commanders, in case Palpatine or Dooku had some sort of backup plan, and the rest of the Gar will be going to complete comms blackout. She's leaving for Kamino to ensure your little brothers are safe. Brea is on her way, but in the meantime, I can fetch one of your brothers if you would like. He was a smart man, but also very stupid. If you can stay, I want you to stay. But I thought the Senate needed you. Bail, with a distant look on his face, took a seat beside Fox and folded his hands in his lap with as much delicate precision as one of his flimsy birds. I'm one of a delegation of 2,000. There are literally thousands of people who can do what needs to be done in the Senate right now. All of those people have my comm ident if they need me desperately, and I do, in fact, have a co-senator who can give my vote if needed. But until Brea arrives, I'm the only soulmate you have here, and there is nowhere else I'd rather be. You love your work. He would never have been away from Brea so long if he didn't. They might never have met. I hope it isn't too forward for me to reply that I also love you, and I am so immeasurably sorry I didn't see it sooner. Fox opened his hand and made a slightly grabbing motion until Bail gave in and linked their fingers together. Decolterador. I don't remember agreeing to marry you, Reynard. And I don't remember you speaking Mandoa, but here we are. Bail ducked his head. I may have asked Wanna about terms related to the concept specifically. Of course he had. And you lied to that poor baby Jedi to get here. What was she, all of six? Senator Organa, Fox exclaimed, with mock horror. Bail smiled, eyes growing warm and inviting. That's not a no I'm hearing. Of course not, you didn't ask a question. Of course not, parroted Bail. That's Brea's job, and it's for later. I had a good friend place significant sums in Master Voss's betting books on you getting married 6 months after Cody and Obi-Wan do. So does a 2-year engagement work for you? The smile grew blinding. It just might at that. They were sitting together again the next day, Fox propped up on his pillows and feeling much better, when Brea finally arrived. In her pocket, she carried the very signet ring that had languished so long in Fox's bedside table, resized to fit his finger, and with the sigil amended to be a personal crest variant with a fox's tail curving beneath the Organa crest. Cody is literally never going to let me live it down if I get married with that ring. Brea smiled at him and finished placing the ring on his finger. You aren't. It's an engagement ring. You can pick the wedding ring yourself. He hasn't actually said yes yet, Bale stage whispered to Brea. She gave Fox a hopeful look. He relented almost immediately. Yes, of course, but we're keeping it under wraps until Cody works up the nerve to ask Obi-Wan. I want to watch him squirm and ask Bly for proposal advice. Of course, Brea agreed, and, practically brimming with happiness, she told him, You're going to love Alderaan. It's quiet, and you have to meet my grandmother. She was the first person we told about you. For the first time in years, they were looking towards a future that was real, that was happening to them. And you have to meet my brothers. He considered his own words. Actually, that might take a while. More than one of them at once will not be good anywhere quiet. Don't worry, Bale told him. We have plenty of time. The end.
Hell was the journey, but it brought me heaven. Time, wonder is time. Give me the blues and that purple pink skies. And it's cool, baby, when me. And isn't it just so pretty to think all along there was some invisible string tying me to me.